Raymond Andrews' family was among the last of the sharecroppers. There were sharecroppers in rural Georgia from 1943 to the end of the decade. Andrews was 15 in 1949 when he left the farm for Atlanta. He's written three novels about black rural and small-town life in Georgia. His new book is a memoir about his childhood called The Last Radio Baby. It's illustrated by his brother, the artist Benny Andrews. Raymond Andrews told me about the arrangement between the landowner and his parents when they became sharecroppers.
Well, the sharecropping deal was whereby whatever you raised, he would get half of it.
The landowner?
The landowner. No matter what it was, he would get half. For instance, you had 20 bales of cotton, 10 bales would go to him. He got everything from that. And your 10 bales, you had to pay him for the seed and fertilizer from that part. And at the end of the year, you seldom that you had anything left over.
And your parents had what, 20 acres and a mule?
Well, we had 20 acres and a mule, then we got 30 acres and two mules.
You say your parents made a profit only once in the 7 years that they
right.
were sharecroppers. Did you have enough money for the family to live on?
Yes, but at that time you didn't need money like you would today. The main thing was food, and we raised most of that. And you would buy clothing at the end of the year, your winter clothing, because during the summer most of the kids went around wearing practically nothing. This was in the South, too. So you went bare feet in the summer. And just during the winter, you need the clothing. Warm clothing, that is. And if you didn't make any money from the farm, you could always borrow the money from the landowner, which would, of course, go in on the debt for your next year's crop. So you were constantly in debt. That's what it amounted to.
As a child, how much contact did you have with the landowner?
Very little personally, but I saw him all the time because he was constantly riding throughout the area. He had a car. He would check on his workers, and he had a lot of land, just not in where we were, but just throughout the county and even outside of the county, quite a bit of land. But I saw him quite often.
What kind of man did he seem like?
Mr. Mason? Well, he was supposedly was a good man. He didn't, I mean, for the time, you think back about it, it's funny, like when I wrote that book, I was trying to think, write it through the eyes of the child, what I thought at that time, because it's easy to sit back in the Monday morning quarterback and to say what should have been and what should not have been. But I was trying to write it through the eyes of the child, what I thought, and these things I took for granted. So I didn't have these feelings then that maybe I have now about the setup.
Compare your feelings now and then.
Well, I just think when you think in terms, you were really a prisoner on this sharecropping business. But as a child, though, I just took it for granted that we lived this way, and once I get away, and I can do what I wanted to do.
As a child, how much were you expected to work?
All the time. On the farm, you're expected to work as long as that was work, which on the farm, that was work every day.
So what kind of work did you do?
Well, we did farm work, and during the time there was nothing in the field, you did things around the house like mending fences and building sheds and things of that nature. And also, the landowner had other businesses, like he had the planer mill, fertilizer plant, peach orchards and things like that, so you worked in those. But my mother insisted upon us going to school. So during the winter, we went to school, which most children in the community didn't do. My mother's a bit different in that respect.
Well, I'm sure a lot of the parents thought it was better to have the children working to keep the farm going.
Right, and also to bring in money. So we had to do without that a lot of times just to go to school.
What gave your mother that faith in education?
Well, she came from a family that was educated, for the area. She had come from another part of the county. And her father and his father strongly in education.
Did she disagree with your father?
Oh, yeah, they disagreed completely over education at the time.
What'd your
My
father
think? Wanted it, but he didn't want to stand up for it. My mother stood up. At that time, it was easier for a black woman to stand up for what she believed in than it was for a black man.
Why?
Well, it became whereby black male versus the white male, who was going to win. But the black woman could say certain things with just a woman talking.
You describe your father as a closet reader. He used to love to read, but he wouldn't want anybody to know it.
My father was also a painter, and he also played the guitar and the violin, which is called the fiddler. He did all of these things as a child. He was taught these things. But you didn't do those things. Real men didn't do those things. They went out and they worked and they fought and they drank and had too many children, got too deeply in debt. And you didn't do stuff like women did reading, girls. But real men didn't do that. So he would try to sneak and read.
What kind of books did you have?
Well, we had mostly magazines. That was very few books. Most of the books I got later would buy from the local drugstore, which had a newsstand, would buy pocketbooks, westerns, mysteries, books of that nature.
Mm-hmm. How did you end up leaving your parents' farm when you were 15 years old?
Well, at that time, when the cotton picking machine came in the late 40s, the sharecropping farms were breaking up. And my brother, my oldest brother, Harvey, lived in Atlanta, so he thought it'd be a good idea if I came to Atlanta, worked, and went to school at night. And so the families thought it was the best thing, too, because to get an inside job at that time was considered a good thing. Inside meant not working out in the fields or the woods. So I went to Atlanta with the idea of working and going to school, finishing school there.
Where did you stay?
I stayed at the YMCA, which is at that time, most country boys, country children, that is, went to Atlanta, would stay at either the YMCA or the YWCA. And it was full of country people.
What surprised you most about the city?
Atlanta?
Yeah.
When I got here, the biggest thing that bothered me later was the buses. Because we didn't have public transportation where I lived in Madison. I got to Atlanta, and I'd heard about it before, and I was exposed to the first time to so directly the racial situation, because you couldn't sit in front on the bus. You had to sit either in the back. And when I first got here, I was so awed by the city, I would get on the bus and sit anywhere. Being a light-skinned person, people weren't quite sure as to who I was. Until one day a woman found out and she sent me to the back. So after that, I stopped riding buses. I would walk every place I would go.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How did you start writing?
How? Well, I always wanted to write from the time I can remember. Early, I drew pictures. And I wanted to write, but I thought when you wrote a book and sent it in, you had to have every period and paragraph in place. And if you didn't, they would be rejected by the publisher. So I'd never heard of editors. So I didn't write anything until I was 32. That's when I started writing.
When you left home, your parents were still sharecroppers. How long did they stay on the farm?
Well, no, what happened, the last year I was there was the last year of sharecropping, because the next year my father started what they call working by the day. We moved from the sharecropping area because this Mr. Mason, he had gotten cotton picking machines to come in there, and so they had no longer had any use for sharecroppers. See, the idea was one of the ideas of my going to Atlanta was to help save money to send back and bring the family up. So the four oldest children worked and saved money, and later on we sent money to my parents to move to Atlanta. And so in 1953 they moved. Except my father, he didn't want to leave. But my mother brought the six youngest children to Atlanta, and so they lived there for the rest of the time.
Did your parents separate over this?
Yeah, they eventually divorced over that, yes. My father wanted to remain in Madison. He didn't want to go to Atlanta. Mm-hmm. He's still there, too. My mother's in Atlanta, yeah. They're divorced now, yes.
Where do you live now?
Well, right now I live in Athens, Georgia. I actually live between Athens, Georgia and New York City. My brother is the painter, Benny. He has a place in New York, so we switch over. He has galleries in Georgia, in the South, so he comes South during the summer and work in this area. And I go North and I spend 2 or 3 months there in New York.
That sounds like a nice arrangement.
It is. I like it. I need to get away for a while, and he needs to get away, so it works well for the both of us.
In your inscription for your memoir, you quote your brother Benny, who said to you, "You and I were too naive to know we couldn't make it."
Oh, yeah, we were a bit naive when I look back at things. We just figured that we got out and we just do what we wanted to do and keep working at it, and we would do it. Now, I got to New York, and I found out later that I had never met so many pessimistic people about chances of doing things. And we figured that once we got a chance to do it, no matter what it was, we would do it. It was hard to explain. I just had never met so many people before who was what I call downers, pessimistic about doing things. And we weren't, when I look back at it. We just figured, given a chance, we would do it.
Was there more than naivete involved? Did your parents also give you that sense that you could do what you wanted to
do? Oh, yes, yes. We got that, especially from my mother. She said we could do anything we wanted to do, as long as, of course, she said, as long as we prayed, and as long as you prayed and you went to school. There's two things we did with her. We went to school and to church. Those two things we did. So she, as long as you go to school and pray, you do anything, you can be anything you want to.
Did prayer help?
Well, I think, yes, it helped. It helped, yeah. It helped, but her, I think her also working hard helped too.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you.
Raymond Andrews' memoir, The Last Radio Baby, is published by Peachtree in Atlanta.